Thank you, Logan. Happy Sabbath, everyone. Welcome to all of you, and welcome to all of you who are joining us via the webcast. Like Mr. Fogelson said, it's great to all be together today. I was made aware of a documentary this week that was described as the most profound documentary of the present time. So we had opportunity to watch this documentary, and it's entitled Social Dilemma. Out of curiosity, how many of you are aware of that and perhaps have seen it? We have a few. The premise is that technology is incredible and capable of manipulating your thought processes in dangerous ways. It is, in essence, expose on the social media industry, if you will, and it's presented through the form of interviews and a panel discussion amongst many current and former social media platform executives. And they're sharing what they're in essence doing and what their objectives are. So a former executive says, "We have created tools that are ripping apart the social fabric of the way that society works. This is a global problem. And as we continue to feed the beast, it gets larger and ultimately could devour us." That's a direct quote. So Netflix produced this documentary, Social Dilemma. Netflix themselves says that their greatest competitor is sleep. And so that they also are competing for the attention of individuals. YouTube creates endless opportunities to acquire knowledge. 4 to 5 hours a day can easily disappear. I'll challenge all of you to take a look at your phones and go to your control center and check your own screen time. This is on iPhones anyway. I'm more familiar with iPhones than Android. You can see not only what your screen time is, but where your time goes and to what applications you devote most of your time. The 2019 average was 6 hours and 42 minutes per day of screen time. 6 hours and 42 minutes average in 2019. It's not known exactly what percentage increase there has been, but it's significant in 2020 because of more time, less time commuting, less time outside of the house. So screen time has gone up. That's over 100 days per year spent looking at a phone. And if you take that as a percentage of your waking hours, because presumably somebody has to sleep, we all do to some extent, as a percentage of your waking hours, it's getting to be 40%, 50% of your waking hours. So there was a notion at one point that our brains stopped developing at some point. It turns out that's not true. It's referred to as neuroplasticity. And that's the notion that our brains can continue to grow and develop as we stimulate them, and as we stimulate them in positive directions. So we're reading through the Bible reading program this year, right? And that means we connect dots in new ways, and it stimulates thoughts in new ways, a very positive trend. Yet we can also shut our brain down and create and facilitate a lack of learning because we're not challenging ourselves. We're not pushing ourselves outside of our comfort zone. Neuroplasticity, and as they've studied it, indicates that those who do challenge themselves. And we had a very fine sermon during the feast from Dr. Eric Moore, who talked about the difference in reading the written word versus consumption on the screen and how it trains our brains to think differently, more deeply, slower, and with less of a response system that we're going to talk about here in a little bit. We are what we eat. And this applies with our cognitive thought processes as well. If we feed our brains junk food, then The result will be that they're not as fit, that they're consuming this junk food. Our attention span has received much attention, you might say, right? That it's getting shorter and shorter and shorter, but let's talk about the implications. It's harder to do meaningful work when we are used to this reward system, and on screen we'll talk a lot about, in the documentary talked a lot about dopamine that's released. It's a pleasure sense that's released when we learn novel information or see an image that we like. It releases dopamine, which is this feedback sensor that says, this is good, this is pleasurable, I want more of it. Other things that release dopamine, good conversations, exercise can release dopamine. So there's other positive ways to get it, yet those become less by comparison. Dopamine is something we become addicted to as well. If you gain it via exercise, we know that some have been addicted to exercise. That can have positive results physically, but also, you know, that can take a lot of time. We can receive dopamine in a lot of different ways and become addicted to that source of dopamine, which is something that the tech executives cause their organization to prey upon. Boring tasks, which we all have to do, let's face it. If we are happy with our job, it's likely that we're happy with 60% of our job because 40% of it is a bummer, right? That's just a fact. Not every job, even our favorite job, the best one we could ever have, is good all the time. There are parts of it we don't like. And when our brain is trained to focus on things that we do like, then we'll find it harder and harder and more time-consuming to do the work that we don't want to do. Normal tasks are more difficult. It's hard to compare to instant gratification, especially when it's only two clicks away. The opportunity cost of that time becomes significant, right? It takes about 20 minutes a day to keep up with the Bible reading program, on average. How many of us don't have time? I mean, all of us get behind. I'm guilty, right? It doesn't happen. But what does happen? These are questions we can only answer for ourselves, right? Meditation and prayer, these things sort of become almost impossible because meditation and prayer, to be done effectively, require turning that thing off and focusing on something else and giving focused attention. Both of them involve focused attention, yet it's hard to do. And it's also something that we can get in shape or fall out of shape, right? We all know that, that we can work hard to get in shape, and yet it's not long before that conditioning goes away, and that's true mentally as well. A French philosopher, Blaise Pascal, observed in the 1600s that all of humanity's problems stem from man's inability to sit quietly in a room alone. He speaks to the value of introspection. More recent times, I was in a class on business strategy and speaking to the notion that leadership needs to take time to recharge, reflect, feed the mind, and think about the direction that they're of whatever organization it is that they're responsible for. And the professor said, action without reflection becomes sloppy and disorganized and ultimately ineffective. Some of us are better at introspection than others. It's a power of the introverted mindset that they prefer sometimes to suppress external stimulation and think internally. Extroverts tend to want to think and process externally, and yet that doesn't express that favoritism towards introspection, yet we can all benefit from it. And the idea of prayer and meditation is really helpful in that way. Think about this. This was a commentary on the documentary. The commenter asked what we would be if we spent an hour a day learning. What different person would we be in a year, in 5 years, in 10 years? Steve Myers asked the attendees at the pastoral development program in November. He said, what do you invest in with your time? Do you invest in personal growth and development? Because except for the books that you read, the education you receive, the people you meet, and the ideas that you talk about, you will be the same or worse person in 10 years. Except for the time that you spend educating and developing yourself with nutritional brain food, right? We have to qualify that. Let's talk about stimulation time. Stimulation time. Before TV, we might go as a society days without being stimulated electronically, without someone else curating the content and feeding that to us. We might have to curate our own content through books, through effort, through conversations, through exchange of ideas in whatever way that might have been. Before TV, we could go days. Before games, YouTube, images, we might have gone hours. Before wearables, we might go minutes. And now wearables are becoming more and more of a ubiquitous possession. Watches that tell you, I got rid of my watch. Actually, I lost it, and I never replaced it because I don't miss it. It would tell me to stand up. It would tell me, good job, you got your exercise done. It would buzz every time I got some notification, a text or this or that. It did not serve my ADD well, right? We can call it ADD. I prefer to call it multitasking. Productivity. Now, we don't really multitask. Let's be honest with ourselves. We cannot multitask. It's a fact. We can only jump from one task to another quickly. It appears as though we're multitasking, but what we're really doing is shifting gears. Remember 8-tracks? Does anybody remember 8-tracks? Yeah, you could just like, I used to play with that button when I was a little kid. I'd just press the button and you'd go to like the middle of another song and you could just jump all over the place. But the fact is that you couldn't listen to more than one song at a time. You were on one of those 8-tracks. And that's the way we are as well. So wearables are going to become more of an issue where we'll have our text coming across our glasses. That may make driving safer. I've shared this with you before, that in states where there are no texting laws, traffic accidents go up because instead of doing this, people are doing this. It's a fact. I'd like to introduce you to the dopamine law. The dopamine law says that every 2 years, unstimulated time goes down by 50%. We're all guilty of this in some of it, in productive ways. I found out that I could do Beyond Today dailies while making coffee, which would have been 10 minutes of unproductive time, and now I can listen to, I can binge on Beyond Today's. Do two or three of those dailies and put some thoughts in my head, right? Well, now I realize that that's also changing my screen time and my unstimulated time is going down. I'm just trying in an attempt to cram more in the day. I'm not saying it's good or bad. It is what it is. And so I can see how this is true. And I used to relish the time in the car and on the airplane, especially airplanes, because somebody else was driving and there was nothing to do. It was a great time to read a book or whatever. But now, books on tape, a video could be downloaded, emails you can catch up on. And if you don't have access to the airplane Wi-Fi, which is kind of a bummer because you can be productive now on the plane, if you don't have access, you could still respond to all those emails. And when you get access, it will send them all out and you've caught up. And so we're constantly trying to keep up. But think about that in your life. How has the dopamine law affected you? Now, we have a range of demographics here, right? So we have younger to older, and some of us may think, that doesn't necessarily apply to me so much. I've got that under control. Yes, but you also have a sphere of influence, right? With friends and family members and children and grandchildren, great-grandchildren, that certainly will be affected by this. So it's good to be educated and aware of what's happening. We also see some of the effects of our time on screen. There was a movie called Inception at one point, and the premise was that to change somebody's mind, you had to go and inject thoughts into their head, and then they would come to the conclusion that you wanted to after you injected these thoughts in your head. The tech executives say that is exactly what they do. Exactly. They learn about you, and they give you the thoughts and feed you the thoughts that they want you to think. The developers were expressing concerns about the tools that they have created, understanding that the use of them has become more and more nefarious. They have exploited consumers. They acknowledge the exploitation of their consumers. Now, this all started out with good intentions, as so many things do. Facebook, let's connect friends and family. Let's make it easier to connect people. Well, that takes off. And then the question is what? You put all your time and effort and money into something to build it. It takes servers to host all of this information. Pretty soon you need to have finances to support it. So the question becomes, well, how do you monetize this? How do you find a way to make a business of this connection of individuals? You can't do it just for altruistic purposes, right? So then they hire monetization experts. And what's the best way to monetize it? Through advertising. What is advertising? Advertising could be described a lot of different ways, but in a sense, it's a manipulation of your thought processes to tell you that you want this. Because here's the stimulus, the cue. Your response is you see something that looks good, and then you want it, and then you buy it. If it's successful, then you'll take action in some way. Ooh, and that feels good. You get a little dopamine release because now you have something new. And repeat and repeat and repeat. So let's make it easier, and let's inject these thoughts more often. So they sell advertising. Advertising only works when you're watching. So there has to be content that's compelling you to watch, right? Advertising, a term in advertising is buying eyeballs. You have to buy your eyeballs and your ears, right? Eyes and ears, to be able to inject these thoughts into you, right? So we see advertising popping up in places it wasn't before. Now these big lit-up billboards on the side of the road that change, right? So they can get two or three ads in as you're driving by. Or at gas pumps. Or now on airplanes, right? They're that place where you used to have that quiet reprieve, not so much anymore. So they're creating addictions. Because if they can create addictions, then they know you'll keep coming back. And so they're purposefully creating addictions. Only software and drug manufacturers refer to their consumers as users. You are being sold. How much do these platforms cost? How much is Facebook? How much? Free. How much is Instagram, Snapchat, YouTube? You can pay for premium, and premium you get rid of the advertisements, right? So then you pay. But if you don't pay, it's free. Is anything free? So if it's free to you, what is the product? You are the product. If it's free to you, then you are the product. And I've heard that said before, and it was repeated in Social Dilemma. So advertisers want to manipulate your thinking, which is slight, imperceptible changes in your thoughts and behaviors. over time as a result of hearing repeated messages that are layered on. And over time, thought processes change. This is the push. It's algorithm-based. So these algorithms are complex mathematical computer models that help determine what you are interested in. And it's based on, first of all, your demographic. So your demographic is, how old are you? What's your gender? What race are you? What socioeconomic class are you? The different elements of the demographic that can give them a good idea of what you are, tuned by your geographic. Where in the world do you live? Where in the country do you live? What are your interests? And then your psychographic, which even amongst those two things can vary wildly. So then they start to learn from what? Your likes, your dislikes, where you pause, where you vote with your eyeballs, right? So when you pause or you consume content or you click on the clickbait, you're providing feedback. And that feedback is, what are you interested in, which tunes the algorithm to give you some more of what you like. That can be good and that can be bad, right? I remember Pandora coming out 10 years ago or so. How many are familiar with Pandora? How many are not familiar with Pandora? So Pandora is an algorithm-based streaming music app. And I remember thinking, this is awesome. I can plug in a song that I like or an artist that I like, and it'll start playing that artist. And then it says, okay, so if you like melodic tones, popular tones, say you like Matchbox 20, and you like the melody, well, then you might also like this artist and this artist. And then you can tune it by saying, I like this song or I don't like this song. And if you don't like this song, then it stops playing songs that are more like that. And if you like it, then it starts playing more songs. If you like Randy Travis, then it might assume that you like George Strait. And then it may play Vince Gill, and you say, oh, I do not like Vince Gill. And you hit dislike, and then it will stop playing songs that sound of his or that sound similar to him. So that's the way the algorithm works, right? And this like and dislike button, it can provide feedback. Is this a problem? It sounds lovely. You can custom tune your content. That can be good. Yet you can also be influenced to think differently. They can start to understand your demographic, geographic, psychographic, and what you might be interested in so that they can feed you more advertising and then start to feed you more of what you'll click on, which is, in essence, ultimately the inception of thoughts. What you look at it, how long you look at it. AI keeps getting better and better. It's referred to as surveillance capitalism. The incentive of the tech companies is not to educate you. It's to profit off of you. These massive valuations that don't make sense in our minds, right? It used to be something to be a millionaire. Millionaire? It's billionaire now. Billionaire. These billion-dollar, multi-billion-dollar tech valuations don't make sense because in many cases, the companies are pre-revenue when they're valued in the billions. They haven't ever made money because they gave it away at free at first to create addictions, and then they monetize it. Who's buying it? And why are they buying it? They're buying it because now the platform is big enough that they can start to influence the subscriber group. You see? Yeah, if traditional valuations on these companies blown out the window. I learned traditional business, price to earnings valuation, debt to equity ratios, none of it makes any sense when you look at tech valuations. None of it. There's no prior methodology that would have made sense. It's a marketplace. This is a direct quote. A marketplace that trades in human futures. Grow or die. Companies must grow or die. All living things do, and companies are like that. They must grow or die. How do they grow? They grow by increasing your engagement, keeping you on the screen longer, growth, the network effect, causing you to invite others or share the content with others, and through advertising, more expensive, valued, targeted ads. So getting more and more targeted with who they're advertising to. Manipulation and deceit is at the center of everything we do, said a current tech executive. You don't realize that this is what they're doing. They are behavioral change specialists. This is what they hire, behavioral change specialists, psychologists that are now working with the developers. Grabbing your attention is the most important objective. Better algorithms gives more attention, more money, and the ability to buy more people, better people, to create better algorithms. Social media isn't a tool, it's a manipulation machine, said one of the executives. Addictions are intentionally created, like that like button or likes when content is posted. There's a dopamine rush when someone likes something you did, or when you get kudos or whatever the platform gives you. And then it's like any rush, it gives you this temporal rush and then a desire for more of it. Parents like the digital pacifier. And perhaps all of us use it as a digital pacifier in some way, right? Something to kill time. It's been interesting to travel. Carrie and I had a chance to travel for our anniversary a couple years ago. And we used public transportation in the cities where we were, and they had good subway systems or bus systems. And sometimes driving would be crazy in, you know, downtown areas. So we would ride public transportation. Other than the clicking of the train tracks, there was almost no talking. Everyone was just looking at their phone. Totally quiet on there. It's leading to a lot of social problems. We may or may not be aware of the depression that has been created because of this idyllic image presented of other people's lives that, by comparison, our own lives seem boring and unfulfilled. Again, by comparison, leaving a dissatisfaction. Suicide and self-harm is up 70 to 300%, depending on the age group, since 2010, almost immediately after these platforms started to really take off. These rates doubled and tripled. It depends on group and gender, yet these suicides are increasing. It's a fact. It's a terrifying fact. This one article that I'm reading, entitled "Another Way the Social Dilemma Affects Us," by Karen DeGroot Carter. She says that the like button is causing a lot of this issue. Suicide was the second leading cause of death in the United States among teens and preteens. So as a result of this rate, this rise, after creating the, or quoting the statistics that I just shared with you, it's the like button. And it says it's unlikely that the possibility such a button would lead to increased suicide rates was foreseen or discussed by tech companies in the early years of the like button spread. But now they can see the hazards because they see what it does psychologically when somebody gets liked or disliked, right? And then negative feedback and comments can be incredibly impactful. We can't prove for sure what the causes are, but the one change during that time period was the impacted lives of young people more than older people was the growth of smartphones and digital media. And then further, it says, given what we know about adolescent development and vulnerability and the intensive need for intimate and healthy social connection during these years, you can see how social media may not be developmentally appropriate. So it's with tremendous risk. We worry about risks, right? We've been made aware of certain risks. Certain risks we just accept, and they may be far more dangerous than the risk that's on the billboards, right? Mask up is on the billboards. Why? To address a risk. Yet, if we're driving on the freeway and then we read the mask up sign, there's a risk our eyes aren't on the road, right? The mortality rate for driving is higher than that of COVID. If we're worried about getting COVID by going somewhere, we should be worried about driving there. More worried about the drive there and the drive home, statistically. So we accept certain risks because perhaps of the reward. Because we want to go where we want to go. We want to do what we want to do. And so we accept the risk that driving there is dangerous, but we'll take it. If you're afraid of shark bite, you should be more afraid of driving to the beach. As Kaylee would say, that's a true fact. A virtual reality computer scientist that works for Microsoft Research says these technologies are killing people and causing people to kill themselves. He suggests deleting social media because of the dark algorithms, and he says that now it has become a ploy by those who have intent to control people to feed more and more information to them that supports their confirmation bias. It's a form of digital Maoism. He described it as digital Maoism, referring to Chairman Mao, a Chinese dictator that's still revered and was the advocate of communism. And you could read about the social unrest that created in their country. Collective authorship, like Wikipedia, tends to produce or align to mainstream beliefs. So, Tristan Harris, a former design ethicist at Google, who has a degree from Stanford where he studied ethics of human persuasion, decided to buck the trend. He was at Google at the time. He sent a paper out saying that we have an ethical responsibility with what we're doing here. And he said at first it generated a lot of feedback, and then it got shut down. And so he formed the Center for Humane Technology, a nonprofit organization focused on efforts to create an awareness of consumer technology. He said, we've all wondered when technology would overwhelm human strength. And perhaps you've been made aware of the potential impact of artificial intelligence with algorithms designed to maximize the potential for the earth or whatever, and that the artificial intelligence could determine that eradicating human life would be in the best interest of the earth. And so that would be the point at which human or artificial intelligence overwhelms human strength. He said, oh, but we're not there yet, but we are here. And that is the point at which artificial intelligence has overwhelmed human weakness, where we no longer have the self-control to stop. And so then this information can be fed to us, this manipulative behavior. We are fed our worldview, he says. In many cases, that's true because we are humans and we do change our thoughts and behavior based on the nutrition that we give our minds. It's a reason that God says, I want you to pause every 7 days, every other thing that you're doing, stop thinking other thoughts, stop doing other actions, and turn your attention to me, he says. So we have this wonderful opportunity every week to have an appointment with our Father and our family, to turn our attention to God and focus on what he wants us to focus on and ideally turn everything else off. I'll throw out there that perhaps we could all benefit from an electronics fast every Sabbath. Put your phone away. It will be there. All that stuff will be there. Put it under the microwave on the charger. Turn the ringer off. Does anybody else have the charger under the microwave? Put it in the microwave, then you won't be able to hear it. Just kidding. So, we're fed information that supports us. Rabbit holes, they call them. Clickbait, it's been referred to. What is that? It's something that will grab your attention, your eyeballs, and cause you to not turn it off and keep going. And then you're giving the algorithm's feedbacks of what you like. And the algorithm does not care whether the information that you're consuming is true or false. It doesn't care. It doesn't even know. It only knows what you like. And false narratives are created and presented to see if people will like them. If they don't, they die and go away. It's like it never caught fire. But if it does, they'll keep feeding it, keep feeding it. An example of that mentioned in the movie is the flat earth theory. Thousands and thousands and thousands of people gave their eyeballs to this, so more and more information was created on it. It's entirely false. Sorry. It's false. It's not true. And it doesn't matter, because if you will pay attention to it and read it, win. They win. They'll continue to feed you more and more information. It's disinformation for profit. Now let's think about it from the perspective that we're here to think about today. What happens if truth goes away? If it's indiscernible anymore what's true or what's not? It's been referred to as fake news. Misinformation is another way to present it. More insidious is disinformation. But it's not true. Our code, codified in the Ten Commandments, says, do not do that. Don't participate in something that's not true. Bearing false witness. That's wrong. This is morally ambivalent. They don't care if it's right or wrong. That's not even part of the conversation. Facebook has been described as the greatest tool for persuasion ever because of its ability to magnify the herd effect. Are you familiar with the herd effect? The herd effect is, well, one way we could put it easily, is the lottery. 2.1 million. That's a lot of money. Some people will buy tickets. And then it goes up to 10 million. Oh, well, I could win $10 million. More people will buy tickets. And then it goes up to 100 million, and they're broadcasting 100 million. And then even we might be triggered to say, I could use 100 million, I'll buy a ticket. So you buy a ticket at the time when you have the least statistical probability of ever winning. Right? That's the herd effect. It's bizarre. It doesn't make any sense, but it's true. It's what we as humans do. And that effect is magnified as this information can spread so quickly. And for good or for bad, political earthquakes are created and then magnified. And once the effect can be known, well, then they can try again and try again, and then it ends up that was just a tremor, and it gets to be more and more. And we've seen this in society recently where that polarization is highlighted because what people like can be added to, and then those poles can be moved farther and farther apart until there's unbelievable amounts of civil disrest, unrest, frustration, anger. Listen to the emotions that we've seen evidenced lately. Hate. Again, these algorithms don't consider true or false, good or bad, only whether it attracts attention and ultimately creates addiction. So let's continue to move forward. Eradication of truth could be the goal. If you can get people to stop reading, well done already. People don't read anymore. Again, at the feast, Dr. Eric Moore gave a message on reading. And I'm not sure that everybody would agree with what he had to say. But reading, if you're not reading something that you know is true, then you could be fed something that perhaps isn't. Thought bubbles are created where individuals are shown more and more of information that agrees with their confirmation bias. Confirmation bias is something that we all have, and that is when we believe something to be true, we will seek out others and other information that supports and confirms what we believe. We will give that more value and more credibility, whereas we will dismiss, ignore, or reject information that disagrees with us and with what we believe or want to believe. That's confirmation bias. Check yourself. Become aware of confirmation bias in your own life and see if that's true. It's true of all of us, really. It's one of the most common forms of bias. So the commenters, the panel, referred to this ultimately as an existential threat to mankind. Because more distraction, more extremism, more polarization can devolve society into chaos. Civil war in America was described as a very real possibility. And we saw in the last election how polarizing, even within households, that particular vote and outcome were, and it could get a lot more. It will get a lot more. So from that article I read earlier, the summary was, it's highly unlikely that deep structural change to the internet industry will come from within. The companies that have become the richest and most powerful in world history by building a money-minting manipulation machine cannot be counted on to voluntarily chuck it out the window. I think we could agree to that. For any reason, even if it harms society, it is a new religion of profit at all costs. What do we do about it? Does anybody need a Tums right now? What do we do about it? We're here to talk about what God has to say. Let's look to the Bible. Let's understand what it says and recognize what is happening, why it's happening. We're in a battle. I think we understand that we are in a battle. Why are we in a battle? We're in a battle because there's somebody to battle with. We're in a battle. If you're in a battle, you have to have what? An adversary, right? So let's turn to Revelation 12. Verse 7, we'll read this. Likely it will become very familiar to us, this section of Scripture. War broke out in heaven. Michael and his angels fought with the dragon. And the dragon and his angels fought, but they did not prevail, nor was there a place found for them in heaven any longer. So the great dragon was cast out, that serpent of old, called the devil and Satan. Meaning, Satan meaning what? Adversary. Who deceives the whole world. And he was cast to earth, and his angels were cast out with him. This became his domain. So this is his domain, and this battle continues underway because Satan is still the adversary to the plan. And the plan is what? To bring others into the God family. God's plan is for us lowly physical humans, weak, insignificant humans from the perspective of Satan, a spirit being, to outrank him as members of the God family, a potential that he doesn't have. That's referred to as motive. That's why he hates you. That's why he wants to destroy you. That's why he's relentless in his pursuit for you. So that he can distract, move offline, change your thoughts. And he's winning 6 hours and 42 minutes a day. Not saying that all that content is bad. We're in the under the tree of good and evil. Yet it can be spun, can be injected. It's not all nutritious. and it can be very manipulative in a negative way. This is a spiritual battle as described in Ephesians 6. Ephesians 6. Verse 12 says, "We do not wrestle against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against rulers of the darkness of this age, against spiritual hosts of wickedness in heavenly places." So these are unseen forces, unseen manipulative forces that are moving us. Notice that it talks about the armor of God. What is the first piece of the armor? Verse 13 says, "Take up the whole armor of God." This is a defense system against these spiritual forces, right? This is the spiritual armor of God. So it's saying that we're wrestling against spiritual forces. What do we need? What should our armor be? How do we defend ourselves against this? Take this up so that you may be able to withstand in the evil day. He wasn't talking about his time as much as he is our time. "And having done all to stand, stand therefore, ready for battle." With what? The very first tool, "having girded your waist with truth." Put the truth on first. Know what is true. Don't be dissuaded or misinformed or moved off the center of truth. That's the first victory for Satan. Who told the first lie in the Bible? Satan. When? Well, we go to the Genesis, right? We're created, and that's chapter 1. Chapter 2, Satan's telling lies. Right away. The first real interaction here described between anybody other than God and man is with Satan telling lies. He's been on the job ever since. He's on it more than ever now, and he's better at it. Better at it. And through that motivation of money and materialism, he's gotten more and more recruits. He took a third of the angels. How many others has he subscribed into doing his work? Think about it. "Stand, having girded your waist with truth." And then it goes from there into righteousness. Doing the right thing. Knowing the truth is one thing. Doing it is another. And then the shield of faith, described in Hebrews 11. And then the sword of the Spirit, which is our offensive weapon. The sword of the Spirit, which is the Word of God. So our offensive weapon is the Word of God, the source of truth. So it's bookended here by truth. 2 Corinthians 10:3. Let's turn over there. "For though we walk in the flesh, we do not war according to the flesh, for the weapons of our warfare are not carnal, but mighty in God, for pulling down strongholds." I'm in 2 Corinthians 10:4 now. The weapons of our warfare are not carnal. Verse 5, this is very important. And it, remember that our armor involves truth. "We cast down arguments and every high thing that exalts itself against the knowledge of God." How do we do that? We have to know. We've talked about this so many times, right? Those that are going to identify the counterfeit don't study the counterfeit. They study the original so that they immediately recognize anything that is different than the original, the truth. And they recognize that. So you avoid what is not true, because it can sway your thinking. Pretty soon you won't be able to recognize it if you look at all these good counterfeits. Only study the original, immediately recognize what is different. That is how we do warfare as described in the Bible. Know the truth, and then cast down arguments and every high thing that exalts itself, bringing every thought into captivity to the obedience of Christ. So every thought, that's our domain. We should be bringing every thought. And as Mr. Guzman Jr. in the sermonette said, evaluating those thoughts. We have this stimulus, right? We've been encouraged recently to respond, not just react. In order to do that, we have to have a little introspection in between that stimulus and response, right? Write this in your notes. Response-ability. Response-ability. We have the ability to respond. Let's consider that dash, the time between the stimulus and the response. What we do with that dash is incredibly important. Incredibly important. Bring every thought into obedience. Be ready to punish all disobedience. This is talking about the self. Self-control is a fruit of the Spirit. The hardest battle we fight is, of course, with Satan and internally. Right? So, we must be intentional about this. 1 John 5:18. We know whoever is born of God does not sin, but he who has been born of God keeps himself, and the wicked one does not touch him. This is speaking to being intentional and deliberate. So in Proverbs we read that the wise man foresees evil and hides himself. So if we know that our self-control is going to be preyed upon, perhaps following the encouragement of a Microsoft psychologist of deleting all your social apps, maybe that's good. Maybe limiting time. We'll talk about what else we can do about it. But again, it says here to be deliberate about it and to be aware. Verse 19 of 1 John 5 says, we know that we are of God when we do these things, right? And that the whole world lies under the sway of the wicked one. Does that meet the criteria of everything that we've described? I think it does. God gives us understanding. Verse 20, we know that the Son of God has come and has given us an understanding that we may know him who is true, and we are in him who is true. So there is an absolute source of truth. Don't let anybody convince you otherwise that truth is relative or moral relativism or that there is no absolute truth. That is not true. That is a lie. Recognize it. Throw it out. Reject it. Don't let it grow in your mind. That's an inception. Somebody's trying to plant a thought in your mind. Let it be one of those seeds that blows away or is completely rejected because it's not true. There is a source of truth. God is it. If you reject God, if you reject him as the source of truth, then you have no source of truth. And this ungrounded sea of information starts to become reality. Recognize it. We've been given something different. This is the true God and eternal life. That's what's at stake. We can filter. 1 John 2:14, 15 talks about these filters that should create triggers in our minds. Do not love the world or the things in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life is not of the Father, but is of the world. And this is what creates that dopamine loop. Nothing creates it more than these three things. The lust of the eyes, the lust of the flesh, and the pride of life. That's what social media is all about. Look at it through that lens and through those filters and prove it wrong. If you can. Say, does this appeal to the lust of the eyes, the lust of the flesh, or the pride of life? Why am I looking at this? Why am I addicted to looking at this? What does it stimulate in me? For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life, is not of the Father, but is of the world, and which we've described as those that adhere to a set of values that are apart from God. It's been referred to as secularism. Right? Verse 17, and this is what's important to us, because we're looking through life through an eternal lens. We just had a week at the Feast of Tabernacles to spend time with each other and time with our Father, time being fed truths, and to lift our chin up, to lift our chin up, and to look through an eternal lens, not at this stuff. The world is passing away and the lust of it, but he who does the will of God abides forever. We've had a week to align ourselves on God's plan for eternity. To lift our chin up and look farther down the road. To look toward eternity. It's what he wants for us. For John 17, 17, I'm going to skim through this. You can look it up. Thy word is truth. Jesus Christ's prayer in the Garden of Gethsemane was for us. And he said, set them apart by your truth. Your word is truth. Prayer from Christ to his Father, our older brother as our intercessor was praying to God the Father to set us apart by his truth. Seek that truth. John 8:32. Again, as speaking to the word, these are Christ's words. If you abide in my word, if you abide in the word, how do you abide in the word? You read it. You read the words. If, Christ says, you abide in that word, then you are my disciples. You are his students, wanting to become like him. That's what the disciple is. The disciple wants to become like their rabbi. Wants to become like their teacher. You shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. So if you abide in that word, you'll know the truth, and the truth will set you free from all of this. Psalm 119:30 says, I have chose the way of truth, said the psalmist. Your judgments I have laid before me. False narratives spread 6 times faster than the truth. They're more interesting. We read about that in other places in the Bible, right? How gossip is tasty. The truth is boring. The thought came to me about unleavened bread. Unleavened bread is humble. We have that analogy during the spring holy days. And 1 Corinthians 5:8 compares the unleavened bread of sincerity and truth to the leavened bread, the puffed up bread, the same nutritional value perhaps, but it's 6 times bigger of what? Malice and wickedness. And that's the end result that we're seeing from a lot of this. Proverbs 23:23 tells us, buy the truth. It's valuable. Spend your money on this. Spend your time on this. What do we have that's valuable? Time, talent, and treasure. That's what we have. Our time, our talents, and our treasure. Proverbs 23:23, saying, buy the truth, do not sell it. Also wisdom and instruction. What do we do about this? Point number three. Point number one was recognize what is happening. We're in a battle. Point number two was know how to recognize truth from error. Apologize if I didn't spell that out. Number three is take action. Stop the dopamine reward loop. Turn off notifications. Time block. I know I'm rapid firing this at you because your attention span is running out statistically. Time block. Give yourself time to look and time to stop. So I looked at where my time goes on the phone, and it's emails, texts. You all know that, right? Emails and texts primarily, some on the phone. The clock. was a big app that I use. And that's because I time block all the time. I'll give myself 50 minutes to work, focus, and then 10 minutes, that's my reward. I get to jump up, go get something to drink, eat, use the restroom, and check all the garbage stuff, whatever it is I want to do. If I need to buy light bulbs on Amazon, that's when I do it, during those 10 minutes. And when that timer's up, bing, get back to work. Force myself to do that. It's a forced discipline system that I've had to create to work for me, because otherwise I become a victim to all the same things, right? We all do. And it's so hard not to do. So Matthew 18:6 speaks to the gravity. Proverbs 18:6 in the Bible I have has a little banner and says, "Allow no occasion for sin." And I will say, before even reading this, that this shows how serious it is, but it's not literal. Okay? "Whatever causes one of these little ones in me to sin, it would be better for him if a millstone were hung around his neck and he were drowned in the depth of the sea. Woe to the world because of offenses." So there will be judgment coming when those that are responsible will be held accountable. That's going to happen. God's going to do that. It's not yet. "Offenses must come, but woe to that man by whom the offense comes. If your hand or foot causes you to sin, cut it off and cast it from you. It is better for you to enter into life without this, rather than having two hands or two feet." That's not literal, but it does give us some idea of the gravity of the situation. How serious should we take it? I think many of us would rather give up our hand than give up our phone. I know that many of the young people would be. You, like, try to take a phone from a kid and hide it. It will not be long before your house is torn apart. The cars will be torn apart. And it won't be long before it's recognized. Do it have a little fun. Go hide some phones and see how long it takes. Set a timer, see how long it takes and what the reaction is. "If your eye causes you to sin, pluck it out and cast it from you. For it's better for you to enter into life with one eye than having two, be cast into hellfire." So, again, we're under the tree of good and evil. It's up to us to develop discernment. It's up to us to have an awareness of whether we're being manipulated or not. It's up to us to know the truth. We're responsible and we're accountable in our lives. Judgment begins with us first. Begins with the house of God. This is self-judgment. You have to do this for yourself. Right? We can recognize that this is happening. So, other things we can do, limit our screen time for ourselves and our kids. This may require or benefit from using tools. Qustodio is one app that I'm familiar with. Qustodio is an app for both Android and iPhone that you can put on your kids' phones. You can set timeouts for homework time. You can set timeouts for sleep time, where you just shut their phone down. They can still dial 911 and call you, but they can't do much else. Our kids hated that app. "Dad, why my phone won't work?" The idea is to keep your child's online experience safe, fun, and productive. You can set whitelist, which are sites that you approve, and blacklist, which are sites that you do not approve. In addition to the filters that you can put on, you can set them at different levels. You can monitor games. It's important to do this. Check their screen times. I gave a certain amount of screen time, and I was amazed at how fast they could burn through 4 hours of screen time. Right? And then they come, "My phone doesn't work." "You had 4 hours today. Do something else. Love you." CleanRouter.com. This is for your whole house. CleanRouter.com goes between the router that goes to your internet service provider and your house and will manage all the devices in your home. Your TV, Game consoles, iPads, iPods, laptops, smartphones. You can do it by IP address. You can have global settings. You can have time limits. So you could pick particular devices and say, these devices don't work from 10 p.m. to 6 a.m. Our kids hated that one too, because then they had nothing else to do but go to sleep. Right? So you can put, again, filters, scheduling, quiet hours. You could do it to yourself. Say that on the Sabbath, you could set it so that it doesn't work. Okay, in conclusion, Ephesians 6, once again, stand therefore having girded your waist with truth. Recognize we're in a battle. Philippians 3:16. You could go there. Suggests we ask God for help, revealing to us what we need to overcome. We may not recognize it, right? We may need some objectivity. So perhaps it's worth it to consider these words. Philippians 3:16 and 17. I'll start in 17. Brethren, join in following, this is Paul's example, my example, and note those who walk, as you have us for a pattern. For many walk, of whom I've told you often, and now tell you even weeping, that they are the enemies of the cross of Christ, whose end is their destruction, whose God is their belly, whose glory is their shame. So those who have sold themselves out to the temporal and the now. He says, who set their mind on earthly things, but our citizenship is in heaven. This is where our loyalty should be. Our citizenship is in heaven. It's under a completely different domain, from which we also eagerly wait for our Savior, the Lord Jesus Christ, who will transform our lowly body that it may be conformed to a glorious body. So that's the eternal lens through which we're looking. And 1 Peter 5:8 is our last scripture. It's an encouragement. Be sober. Be serious, it's saying. Be vigilant, meaning watchful. Because your adversary, the devil, walks about like a roaring lion seeking whom he may devour. He wants to consume you. He can't do it any other way but causing you to choose it. And he makes it better and better and is throwing more and more resources at it. Better and better psychologists, better and better algorithms, making it easier to click the wrong choice. Resist it.